As late as the 18th century, people were being burned to death at the stake or tortured at the rack on wheel for believing in and teaching physiological and astronomical concepts which were not a part of the liturgy of the Holy Roman Church. In the Middle Ages, popes, cardinals, bishops, monks, nuns and priests, as well as school teachers, all taught that the earth was God's footstool, it was square and at each of the four corners, an angel was holding it up while the heavens revolved around it. Copernicus was the first major luminary to preach against these asinine astronomical concepts. Others like Galileo followed in their work to illuminate the Western world. It is also interesting to note that in the 16th century, a certain Catholic archbishop, Usher of Armagh, definitely established the creation as having taken place in the year 4002 BC. This ridiculous assumption was later verified by Bishop Lightfoot, another luminary of the Church who not only agreed upon that year but also gave the exact day and minute. How great indeed is the contrast between this narrow-minded Middle Ages bigotry and our present-day knowledge of our Earth and universe. Perhaps it might be well at this moment to go into some facts and figures which are currently available and which are part of the curriculum taught in the various science classes in schools throughout the Western nations. Our tiny Earth is one of nine major planets revolving around a central star or sun. This sun is one of the dwarf suns which shine in our own major galaxy or universe and which is a disc-shaped rotating sea of some 30 billion stars or suns looking somewhat like a pinwheel. Some idea of the size of this galaxy can be visualized when we realize that light, traveling at 186,210 miles per second, takes 100,000 light years to travel from one edge to the other, and at the center part or the hub, is 10,000 light-years thick. It also takes light 315,000 light-years to travel around the complete circumference. Moreover, this galaxy is expanding and some other galaxies photographed by astronomers are speeding away from us, out into space, at more than 200 million miles an hour. It is also estimated that our own solar system is traveling toward the outer edge of our galaxy at about 600,000 miles per hour. Looking further out into space and using not only giant telescopes but also the more newly developed radio telescope, the astronomer has found more than 6,000 million other galaxies and he is just beginning to count them. Remember also that our nearest neighboring galaxy is more than 1,500,000 light-years away and if you could travel 1 million miles an hour, it would take you about 3,000 years to reach the nearest star which is 4.5 light-years distant. Of course these figures are meaningless to the third-dimensional mind. One important fact, however, does remain uppermost, that in space it is now well known that certain physical bodies like suns and galaxies are traveling at more than twice the speed of light and this fact has already vindicated one of the concepts postulated in this text, that the speed of light is only a divisional quantum of energy expressed from one dimension to another. Returning to our more immediate environment, the Earth, it has been found by scientists using rockets and satellites, that about 6 to 10,000 miles above the Earth, there are at least two large radiation belts which encircle the Earth like bands. It has also been found that 100 miles above the Earth, the mean temperature at the North and South Poles was higher than at the equator, 100 miles above the Earth. Another discovery made by the IGY, that the sky as seen above the atmosphere contains numerous sources of ultraviolet light, which appear as diffused nebulosities, proof that the cosmic ray flux is markedly increased in intensity at the time of sunspot maximum, indicating the existence of magnetic fields in interplanetary space, verification that auroral displays contain electrons and ions. These facts again partially vindicate certain other concepts presented in the context of this book, that such energy is considered heat and light which supposedly comes from the sun in a straight line transference, is entirely erroneous and that energy from the sun is converted into heat and light through magnetic hysteresis from various magnetic lines of force interconnecting the sun and earth as well as all other heavenly bodies and all such energy does not come as a direct line transference but is resolved into a cyclic motional transference. Also, the sun, like all other suns and planets, are apexes of great vortexes of energy, giant centrifuges of interdimensional energy which fills this so-called space, resolve themselves not only into giant galaxies, but lesser vortexes become suns, and smaller vortexes within the vortex of the sun become hardcore nuclei called planets. This is the true construction of the infinite macrocosm. Someday it is quite probable that the scientist will have a much more accurate picture of this infinite than he now possesses, and when that day arrives, cosmic continuum will be completely vindicated. Second addendum. It is generally observed and conceded that during the past 60 years, man has achieved the greatest and most significant advances in various cultural sciences since the beginning of historical anthropology. This is particularly true in the realm of the classical sciences and, with this rapid development of these various sciences, mankind has been literally whisked from out of the complacent horse and buggy days of the gay 90s and plunged into a mad, roaring, screaming world of automation where he is now living a veritable robot-like existence. In this era, we have witnessed many rapid and startling changes, and with their coming, the old life passed away. With modern means of communication, any point on this globe is but hours or minutes away. Perhaps the greatest and most significant changes, however, have occurred within the framework of the pure classical sciences themselves, for within the various associated fields of physics, chemistry, aeronautics, astrophysics, astronomy, etc., have come many new and important concepts, and with their coming, old laws and old concepts have also passed away. After the close of World War II, great strides were made in the science of nuclear physics, and with the development of various nuclear devices and weapons, activity in this field tapered off and was replaced by the new space age and its adjunctive developments in rockets, satellites, etc., all of which was tremendously activated in competition with the communist world. As of today, this new space age has been brought about, not only through the competitive efforts in rocketry, but great emphasis and activity has been entered into collectively by many nations of the world in the field of pure astronomy and associated astrophysics, and perhaps no other field of science has witnessed so many rapid changes and developments which are going on in this ever-changing world. Almost overnight, and sometimes hour by hour, theories and values change as scientists probe with their telescopes and satellites into the great unknown voids everywhere about us, and as of this time, no real valid or comprehensive configurations exist as to what constitutes the great universe which stretches out into the dim unknown. This is a general opinion currently shared not only by astronomers, but by any sundry individuals who are keeping abreast of these rapidly changing developments. A complete verification of our present-day invalid astronomical science was made in a public expose over a national television network March 26, 1960, by a group of three eminent astronomers and one physicist, who were respectively, Dr. Fred Hoyle, British astronomer, DRS, Alan Sandage and Jesse Greenstein, and Dr. William Fowler, California physicist, in an hour-long program. These eminent savants climaxed the show in a mild conflict of opinions which involved, chiefly, the manner in which our universe was created and its age. These men did agree, however, on one pertinent issue, that by and large, all stars or suns which could be seen or photographed, were primarily of the same chemistry or atomic constituents. We will neglect for the moment the interjection of vast astronomical distances and enter more directly into the other issues, namely, the age and method of the creation and its countless billions of galaxies, star clusters, and stars. At the present time, there seem to be two theories for this creation. One is called the Big Bang theory, which goes something like this: at some long ago time, 8 billion or more years ago, there existed a tremendously big ball of condensed energy. Then, like some huge celestial firecracker, this thing exploded, scattering galaxies and stars all over the universe and where, theoretically, they have been spreading out ever since. This theory is of course invalid on several counts. First, on such an explosion, Such objects would be hurled away from the center in a straight line, and it is known that our universe rotates just as do the various galaxies. Moreover, it is now known that our universe is filled with strong magnetic lines of force which are curved in a pinwheel fashion, just as are those seen in various galaxies like our own. One more point, it is also known that the further away any particular galaxy is from us, the faster it is traveling away from us. Our own galaxy is proceeding on a curved line out into the unknown at about 600,000 miles per hour. Other galaxies further out are known to be traveling at 2 million miles per hour. In any explosion, any object traveling away from the center of the explosion constantly loses speed, not gains it. The second, or steady-state theory of creation, while more valid, is still incomplete. This theory postulates that from the center of the universe or some unknown point, new galaxies and new stars are constantly being created where, after a few billion years or so, they gradually die or fade away. And while they are so living their cycle, they somehow strangely become accelerated toward the outer unknown periphery of the universe. What gives these stars or galaxies this constantly accelerated speed is still unknown, and we may ask, where and what is the original source and origin of any energy which comes into our visible universe? The presentation of this existing evidence, which was discussed on this television program, shows that our present-day science of astronomy is still in complete and abysmal ignorance of the creative forces, not only in the field of astronomy and the macrocosm, but in nuclear science or the microcosm. Let us take, for example, the steady-state theory of the creation of the universe and, with a clear and lucid explanation, fill in the obvious lacking elements which would complete this theory into a rational fact. If the astronomer could picture a tremendously vast vortex of energy which existed in the more immediate fourth, fifth and sixth dimensions, where, in this great centrifuge, tremendous forces were at work through a certain positive and negative relationship as posed by various polarities of waveforms of energy compounding this vortex, certain movements take place which can be likened to the action of centrifugal and centripetal forces. In other words, while positive energies traveled toward the periphery, other more negative energies traveled toward the center, becoming more compact or dense and more negative as they approach this center. Within the very center, energy is extremely compressed, so much so that a certain amount of transductance takes place into the third dimension. Vast curved magnetic lines of force stem out into the third dimension and, like the power lines from a powerhouse, conduct some of this compressed energy into our third dimensional universe, first in the form of simple electrons and protons which, in a commonly formed eddy current, assume the form of hydrogen atoms. Great masses of these hydrogen atoms through certain pressures known as ionization are brought together into vast tenuous nebulosities called galaxies. These cloud masses and hydrogen atoms are being constantly impelled away from the central core by a tremendous repulsive force, which is actually the flow of electromagnetic energy composing the great magnetic lines of force which all flow toward a common terminating polarity at the periphery of the universe. As these cloud masses are expelled away from the center, the ionization of positive and negative particles in the formation of hydrogen atoms begin to form nuclei. These collect and grow larger, eventually forming a star or sun. In this aggregate process of positive ionization, polarization also occurs in varying distances from the sun. These negative polarities form the planets. Not all suns form planets simply because in the rapid steady rate of expansion, great magnetic turbulence occurs which sometimes breaks up these various planetary polarities where they disintegrate into the semi-gaseous form, to again be used as new material. This magnetic turbulence will also explain ANOVA, for here again ionization and polarization are vastly speeded up to a point where a burning out occurs. The star flares up and disappears. Magnetic turbulence will also explain pulsating stars, for here it can be seen that a certain cyclic motion is involved in the ionization and polarization process. Expansion from the central vortex, as has been previously explained, will also compensate for the differences in speeds of stars and galaxies from the center into the unknown, For as these heavenly objects proceed along the curved or bent magnetic lines of the universe is also rotating, following the same direction of rotation, but at a lesser rate of speed than the vortex which formed it. Everyone knows that an object traveling on the rim of a wheel travels much faster to complete one revolution than does an object nearer the center of the wheel. Therefore, as the universe rotates, any galaxy constantly accelerates in speed as it progresses further out toward the periphery. The galaxies themselves are primarily formed in vortexal fashion as the result of vast eddy currents which are interplaying among themselves in their magnetic fields. The galaxies, as spiral nebulae, can be pictured somewhat like a snowball rolling downhill. The galaxy is rotating between tremendous lines of force. The principles involved here are quite similar to those found in an alternating current motor. As for the suns and stars themselves, the same process of synthesis is taking place to form the various known atomic constituents. The same gyrating centrifugal and centripetal forces always create and sustain any atom from the immediate fourth dimension. Not all energy which stems from the central vortex becomes atomic material. In the process of this vast cosmic hysteresis, many of these units of energy which can be called electrons or protons, fly off into the free space of the third dimensional world. These tiny particles or electronic bullets, upon entering Earth's atmosphere are known as cosmic rays. Likewise, the strong magnetic lines of force extending from the central vortex in conjunction with other such similar vortexes, create an infinitely vast and complex system of magnetic lines of force, all of which go to make up the controlling forces to hold various planets in their various orbits around their respective suns, as well as controlling the shape and ultimate destiny of various galaxies in this great universe. One more point must be made. Before his demise, Einstein presented to the world the theory of space-time continuum, wherein he mathematically proved that the speed of light, 186,210 miles per second, was non-existent in space and that light could and did accelerate 4 or 5 times that speed. If Einstein was correct, what then becomes of all the known mathematical computations which astronomers have made regarding the distances found in our universe? How can the modern astronomer correctly evaluate the temperature of some star by using the method of inversed proportions, figured on the basis of candle power light which comes to the Earth, sometimes millions of years after it started its journey? It is clearly indicated that at the present time the astronomer, like the nuclear physicist, is hopelessly entangled in a web of intangibles, and the further he proceeds along the false lines of his various assumptions, the more inextricably enmeshed he becomes. As far as the future is concerned, it will remain for the scientist of the future age to cut these Gordian knots and to present to himself and mankind a factual and realistic composite science based upon an understanding of creation which begins in the higher and presently unknown dimensions. Inasmuch as the question may be raised as to what is the common terminating point of the cosmic universe, this means that in the expansion of this universe, a point begins to be reached where the magnetic lines of force again relink themselves with the positive corresponding polarities of the upper fourth dimensional vortex, something similar to positive and negative magnetic line linkage observed with a common horseshoe magnet. At the point where the lines of force begin to bend into the fourth dimension, all atomic constituents following these lines of force will begin to disintegrate back into their original energy constituents. This bending will explain the known curvature of space. This disintegration can be seen in such elements as radium and uranium, the older of the known elements which have already begun their disintegration and subsequent reabsorption back into the fourth dimensional infinite. Someday the astronomer may find a neighboring and similar universe and which does, in the same sense of polarity interactions, form the structural network of magnetic lines which makes energy conductance from higher dimensions into third dimensional forms possible, also such subsequent atomic constituents as elements which are the inductive facsimiles of this great cosmic evolution. This, then, is the cyclic evolution of creation, a way in which the infinite creator, whom people call God, regenerates himself and makes of himself every visible and invisible form and substance known to mankind. When, in some distant future, mankind can universally see this great creation in action, religions, wars and associated dogmas and creeds, together with the lusts and bigotries, will largely disappear from the minds and hearts of men, and in the place of these materialistic elements will be superimposed an abundant freemasonry of mankind, which will make not only stellar space travel possible but will give all men who so understand, an access door into the higher spiritual realms of light. Because of the vast and intricate complexities of the cosmic universe, the foregoing addendum was presented in a more easily understood form, a sort of thumbnail sketch. In future presentations planned by the author, a more thorough and complete dissertation will be entered into. So far as the astronomical findings contained in Addendum No. 1 are concerned, these figures were drawn from currently existing astronomical suppositions, and the author does not vouch for their accuracy. More accurate facts and figures will not be coming to the astronomer so long as he attempts to evaluate the vast creative cosmogony on the basis of known third-dimensional reactive formulas. Such computations are only relative and fall almost as fast as they are created. For instance, on the aforementioned television show, a pertinent issue involved was the age of the universe. A few years ago, this age was thought to be 2 billion years, based on the theoretical evolution of the uranium atom. Today, believers in the Big Bang theory state that it is at least 8 and possibly 13 billion years old, and one of the doctors on the aforementioned show is now bringing forth a new evaluation of 24 billion years, based on the assumed life cycle of a certain bright star. To the future, then, we salute the new day which will bring forth a new and better science and understanding of the creative universe. About the author. Any attempt at a thumbnail biography which would accurately and fully portray the life of the author would be a gross disservice. Sufficient to say, the future history of the world will unquestionably prove the author to be, without exception, the greatest outlet of interdimensional cosmic knowledge the world has ever known, for he has indeed proven beyond any question of doubt that he works with and from a higher world. The most expressive segment of his life work began with World War II, and through that shadowy period of Earth's history he aptly demonstrated the ability of a well-trained clairvoyant mind, to almost countless thousands of people, and particularly to the wives, mothers and sweethearts of the servicemen overseas. He accurately described past, present and future incidents in the lives of these servicemen and to any and all others as they were met in all kinds of places and under varied conditions, usually accompanied by miraculous healings and adjustments. His true mission in life, however, did not begin until 1954, when he met and married Ruth, and from that time on he began pouring forth a wealth of literature which ran the gamut from ethereal poetry, philosophy, psychology, evolution, life after death, spiritual dimensions, to the most profound fourth-dimensional discussions on matter, time-space, etc. This great explosion of wisdom through the channel of the mail service began to reach many thousands of people, some in foreign countries, and even more wonderful were the accompanying psychic manifestations and demonstrations which changed the lives of those who studied. And as they studied and learned about their past and future, they saw displays of beautiful spiritual lights, smelled strange and lovely perfumes with physical, mental and spiritual healings and adjustments, and had numerous other kinds of demonstrations happen to them. All this and much more too, is part of the future history which will reveal the true nature of this man, the vastness of his mission, which is indeed the actual beginning of the millennium, their second coming. This history now resides in the many thousands of life testimonials of his students, and although he makes no claim, they all know him as the Man of Galilee.